Jewish Latin Princess, Episode 16, Pearl Wolf, music composer and singer.
You're listening to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast by Ya'el. Every week, get your dose of inspiration from the world's most uniquely talented Jewish women. And from Ya'el herself. Seeking profound and practical ways to live a joyful, richer Jewish life? Welcome to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast. And now, Jewish lifestyle expert and bilingual blogger at JewishLatinPrincess.com, your host, Ya'el.
You're listening to Jewish Latin Princess, everyone. Welcome back. I'm Ya'el Trush, your host. Are you musical at all? Where are the musicians in the house? I'm not one of them. I have a husband and kids who were blessed with musical talents, but I really wasn't. I do love music, however, a lot. And today I have a young woman who's made music her career, and not in the way most women go about in the music industry. Pearl Wolf is a Hasidic music composer and singer who performs only in all women's settings. Through her music and its lyrics, she is able to express Jewish wisdom and the teachings of the Hasidic mystical tradition and help women find a space where they can connect with each other in a deeper level by the mere fact that there are no men in the room. That can be really cool and really powerful. And it's not just the Jewish world who's embraced this. Pearl, who used to be the lead singer in the all-women's Hasidic band Bulletproof Stockings, has received accolades and very positive feedback from the general public. I do not know if you've ever been to an all-women's performance or even to a traditional Jewish wedding or other event where there was only women dancing and or singing. But if you have, you might agree with me that there is a special energy which is very positive and very uplifting in the room during those events. Pearl and I go through the personal journey which brought her to the point where she is now. Pearl didn't always know that this is what she wanted to do with her life. It wasn't until she hit a very dark point in life that music played such an important role and led her slowly but surely to where she is today. And speaking of today, it's been about a year since Pearl has embarked as a solo artist, and she's in the midst of recording her first album. So if there are any female musicians out there, this might be a great opportunity for you. Pearl is looking for talent, so go ahead and email her at pearl@pearlmusic.com. Pearl and I talk about the divine providence in her life, fears, challenges, and what it's been like to embark on uncharted territory. Now as a solo artist, Pearl continues to pave the way in the music world and use her talents to bring goodness and light into the world. Pearl is a real inspiration, not just on stage, but off stage as well. And I'll let you hear that for yourselves. Enjoy the show. Pearl, welcome to Jewish Latin Princess. It is such a pleasure to have you here. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me, Baruch Hashem. I'm very, very good.
I know you're very busy with the recording of an album, so I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. All right. So I want, before we get started to the new album and everything that's going on now with Pearl, I want you to take us down a little bit, down memory lane, and tell us, when did you start your music training, and did you always know? Do you wanted a career in music? Tell us about all that.
Sure. So I've always been interested in music. I've always had music be a huge part of my life. I grew up with musicians in my house and many musicians in my family. Uh-huh. And I asked my mother to give me piano lessons from a very young age. So I started taking piano lessons at 6 years old. Yeah. And I continued until I was about 18. So a good portion of my life, I was classically trained in piano. I later started playing drums a little bit. And more recently, I've started trying to learn guitar. So I've always been interested in music. And I was always in choirs and school and any, you know, extracurricular activities that my mother would sign me up for. A lot of them were music related, dance, mm-hmm. and choir and etc. So it's always been a huge part of my life. But as far as playing music or writing music professionally. I definitely never thought that I'd have a career in music. It's interesting. My mother actually really tried to encourage me to become a classical pianist, and I just thought that sounded like the most boring job ever.
Oh my goodness.
I was like, Ma, I love music. Don't make me hate it. Like, if I had to do it for a job, I think I would quit right away, which is probably true. I probably would have if I had started back then. So it's interesting that I'm a musician now because I just never thought of myself, even though I played music and I was always involved in music, I never thought of myself as a singer. I never thought of myself as a musician. It was just something that I really love. And
wow. And some singer you are. I want to tell you something. When you came to Houston a couple months ago in the spring, and you came and you were at an all women's concert, and that's when we first met, I came back home and my husband asked me, how was it? And I said, amazing. She sounds like an angel. So he smiles and he says, what does an angel sound like? I said, like Pearl Wolf. You don't understand. I mean, seriously, did you have voice lessons, voice training also along the way?
Oh my goodness. First of all, you are incredibly sweet. That is way too kind. I didn't take vocal lessons as a kid. Once I started writing music a few years ago, and decided that this was something that I might want to pursue, I took a few voice lessons. So I did start meeting with a vocal coach. I don't do it regularly. I really should. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely helpful to learn about, you know, there are things that come intrinsically, especially if you're naturally a creative person or you're a musical person, but then there are things you can learn technically that help a lot. So I would say, and I'm still learning,
right,
how to open my voice more, how to breathe better, you know, to warm up my vocals beforehand, which I'm not meticulous about and I really should be, but that's very, very kind of you to say that.
Tell me something. Speaking about music, you grew up in a Hasidic home, and from what I've read about you, you were actually, aside from the fact that you were taking classical music and piano lessons and all that growing up, you were exposed to non-Jewish music just, you know, like just growing up, right? And I know there are no hard and fast rules on these things, but certainly many families are a little bit more conservative in that regard. Your parents seem to have been a little bit more chilled about it, yeah?
So I guess it depends at what point in my life. I was definitely exposed to a lot of just music and art and secular culture that a lot of Hasidic kids are not exposed to. Just naturally, my parents and my family in general are mostly very well educated and very interested in the arts. And, you know, we went to museums and saw films and things like that. So all of those, most of those things are things that a lot of Hasidic kids, especially, you know, in more, I guess, insular communities are not exposed to.
Right.
And for me, it was just like, that's just part of my life. As far as like listening to the radio and listening to rock music or rap or hip hop or whatever it is that I was listening to and that I do listen to now, my parents did try to shelter me a little bit from that, especially when I was younger. And when I was, you know, going to Lubavitch Elementary School mm-hmm. and in Lubavitch High School. And I kind of just listened to it anyway, especially because I felt like, well, I'm already exposed to these things. Like, when I'm supposed to stop at this point, you know? And it's hard. I empathize with parents, Orthodox Jewish parents, who are trying to figure out like how much to give, and you know, you don't want to give too much. You want to expose your kids so that they'll be cultured and have this familiarity with arts, but at the same time, you know, there's a lot of explicit stuff out there that you might not want your kids to be exposed to, and it's hard.
It's a hard balance.
It's a very hard balance, and I definitely will say, because my mother will probably be upset if I don't be honest about this, she did try to you know, shelter me a little bit, at least from some of the more explicit music out there, and I found it on my own anyway, as kids
as teenagers naturally do.
Exactly.
You were a normal child, no worries.
Right, exactly. Thank God it turned out all right. And I think music is something that, you know, as I got older, and, you know, everyone in my family, most of the people in my family do listen to secular music, and I think that we all naturally kind of, you know, figure out ourselves, like what works and what doesn't. Like, even myself, I wasn't always religious. I kind of went off the path, so to speak, for a while, a few times in my life. And, you know, even now I do listen to secular music, but there are certain songs
you have
that
some
are
limits.
Like, yeah, I have limits for myself, and I'm right. an adult, obviously, so I can listen to whatever I want, but I, you know, I think you can naturally feel if something is negative or something is hostile, you know, it doesn't feel good in your soul to listen to it. And so I've kind of sensitized myself a little bit more. So I'm more, I guess, careful with what I listen to now, not from a religious perspective as much as from a, I guess, a spiritual
right.
perspective on what feels good and what feels right. But yeah, no, I mean, my family did listen to, you know, the oldies and the Beatles, and I was exposed to Aretha Franklin and Etta James and, you know, Louis Armstrong, all these classics back in the day.
It's so funny thank God you say that.
Huh?
It's funny you say that because you just reminded me that actually I was sitting in shul over Shavuot, I think, and the Rebbetzin of our shul, I don't know, somebody said a phrase, and then you know how when you say a phrase, I can't even remember what it was, but like you sing a song that had that phrase or something. Mm-hmm. So we just like piggybacked and we sang this song. I'm trying to remember what it was. And then the Rebbetzin of our shul kept singing it, and she knew all the lyrics. It's like, how do you know that? And she's like, and she said, you know what? Back then, music was just clean. It wasn't the garbage that it is today. So we listened to some of it. So there you go. Anyways, so you mentioned a little bit of a spiritual struggle, a religious struggle. So, you know, I think of if I read correctly, the beginning of your career as a musician, your official music career had to do with this kind of struggle you were going through. And it's, you know, the sages always say, "Kol atchalot kashot," all beginnings are hard. So I think there was some hardship in your beginning, right? Tell us.
Yeah. So like I said, I've always been involved in music, but I didn't start writing music until after I got divorced a few years ago, in 2011. Mm-hmm. So in early 2011, I actually got divorced for the second time in my life. And it was very confusing. The first divorce was confusing. The second divorce was like, really?
Wow.
What? Like, I thought, you know, I thought I had, and I had worked on myself a lot, and I had grown a lot and learned a lot. But you know, we are fallible human beings and mm-hmm. Make mistakes. And so I guess I was very, very distraught when I found myself in a similar situation again. And I just thought, like, what am I doing wrong? You know, I've been taking care of myself. I took time off of dating. I like tried to learn from my mistakes. I'm not bitter about it. I have been so positive about this. Like, what could I have done differently? And why would this happen again? And I just, it kind of sent me into this spiral of, well, either, you know, either Hashem just doesn't exist, or, you know, God just doesn't exist the way that I thought that God existed, mm-hmm. which is that God is involved in every minute detail of every single person in this planet's life. And, you know, everything's Hashgacha Pratis, everything is meant to be. And so maybe, you know, maybe either God doesn't exist and I'm a fool to have believed for so long, or maybe he does exist and just doesn't care and isn't involved in that way, you know, created the world and then kind of like took a step back.
Right.
Or, you know, or it's all true, and everything I learned in Hasidus is true, and everything the Alter Rebbe says and Tanya says is true, and then what? Like,
right.
I didn't need
this curveball, God.
Right, exactly. And I felt very distressed about this and really confused about what I believed and what I wanted. And so, interestingly, at the same time, I guess, you know, this difficulty opened up this other channel, and all of this music started coming out of me. And it was not even intentional. I didn't think to myself, like, oh no, I'm having a hard time. Maybe I'll get my creative juices flowing and try to write a song. It was like, all of a sudden, music was just in my mind, and I didn't know what to do with it. So I literally ran to my laptop. I just remember the first song that I like had in my brewing in my brain. I just went to my laptop, pulled it open, and just started recording myself singing. And I wasn't even singing lyrics. I was just singing this tune that was in my head.
Wow.
And I pulled out my keyboard. I figured it out on my keyboard. And then within a couple of days, I had lyrics and I had written a song. And I was just like, whoa, that's so crazy. How did I write this song? It's such an interesting process. And I'm so not used to this. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, maybe I'll try and write another song and see how that goes. So I tried to write another song and I was like, this time I'm actually going to throw some intention in there. You know, I'm not just going to let it flow through. I'm going to try and write something that sounds very different than the last one. And it's a little bit poppier and a little lighter feeling. So I tried that and it worked. And then I was like, I'm going to try a different song. I'm going to try something a little bit more, you know, I don't know, with a rock edge to it. And then I wrote another song, and within a week I had a whole album full of songs that I had written, and I was just blown away. Like, I didn't even know I could do that. And then furthermore, the songs were really, and it sounds so cliche, and so many artists I've actually, you know, read in interviews talk about this, but it's obviously legitimate because so many people have experienced it. It really felt like I wasn't really writing the songs. They were just kind of coming out. So it was a very, very interesting experience. It was a really amazing experience. But at the same time, I still didn't know if I would do anything with these songs. I was like, wow, this is really great. It's really nice to have a change of scenery instead of just, you know, being depressed about my situation. Now I have something positive and creative to focus on. I really didn't know if I would perform or produce them in any way. Little by little, I started to show them to a couple of people and said, like, oh, you know, it's kind of funny, but I just wrote this song the other day. I'm really curious to know what you think. And the feedback was so intense and so, wow, this is amazing. You have to produce this. You must go play this stuff. You must go make an album. And I was like, really? Sure. I don't know. Like, really? Me? You think so? Like, I mean, it's fun, but, like, you know, I started to have all of these other questions, like, well, you know, I'm not really so religious right now, and I don't know if I want to be religious, and if I became a singer, how would I do that? You know, would I perform for secular audiences, for Orthodox audiences? Would I perform for men and women or just women? And I started thinking about all of those things, and I thought, you know what, I'm not even going to worry about that now. Like, I'm going through my own process right now. Obviously, I had just gone through something very difficult, and I was in a state of spiritual, I guess, confusion. So I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to quit my day job. I was working in New York at the time as a makeup artist. And I was like, I don't know what I want or who I am right now, but I know I have this music and I don't want to stop writing. But I also want to remove myself from the situation I'm in and get a clearer picture of what's going on, because I wanted to make sure that before I threw everything away, all of my Yiddishkeit and, you know, whatever it was I was considering, like, you know, just uncovering my hair, just changing my entire lifestyle. And by the way, I should mention, just because I mentioned the hair covering thing, mm-hmm. There are plenty of women who don't cover their hair, even if they are married, and there are plenty of women who get divorced and do uncover their hair. So that was not to make any statement right. or judgment on that. That is for every woman to decide themselves what they're comfortable with. At the time, I had chosen to keep my hair covered, but I was starting to consider maybe not doing that. And I thought, well, you know what, Peril, you're going through a difficult time. Like, don't just make a decision right now, because it's the worst place to make a decision from. Like, right. remove yourself from the environment you're in and think about it more clearly. So I quit my day job. I moved back to my parents' house in Chicago, where I'm from. Uh-huh. And I was like, I'm just going to go. I don't know how long it's going to take. I might be there the whole summer. I might be there for a year. Who knows? In the meantime, I'm just going to work on my music, and I'm going to try and heal and figure out, you know, what my situation is. So I did that. I moved back to Chicago, and I was there. It was like actually almost exactly 6 years ago, because it was May, June, July, August time that I was there. Mm-hmm. And I spent that whole summer just writing more music and, I guess, agonizing over my spiritual state and trying to figure out, you know, who am I and what do I believe? And through my music, actually, I realized that I really do believe all of this. I really do believe that the Torah is true for me, and that Chassidus is true, and that this is who I am. And it was through reading my lyrics back to myself, I was like, wow, you know, all of these songs are about longing for godliness and longing for Mashiach. And even though I'm not using those words, I'm right. all in English, and I write in maybe a more poetic, cryptic way sometimes. It was so clear to me that that's obviously what these songs were about. And I was like, okay, I'm just going through a hard time right now. This is who I am. I am a chassid at the end of it. I don't know how long it will take me to get back to where I was, or who knows, maybe I won't go back to where I was. I'm not mm-hmm. going to think about it in that way anymore. You know, it's not like once I reach the certain level of holiness, now I'm good. Like, no, there's no such thing, you know?
It's all a journey.
It's all a journey. It's a relationship, you know? It's literally a relationship. Everyone's Judaism and everyone's religion to themselves should be very personal. And, you know, this is why it's so important not to look at what other people are doing and to judge a religion or a whole community of people based on individuals. It's like every person's business is their own business, and every person's Judaism, every person's, you know, whatever religion you practice, that's your relationship with God, and it's completely personal, and it takes its own path. And so I was like, I know I'm going to go back to New York. I know I'm going to end up being religious again, but I'm not going to put any limitations on it. I don't have a time frame. I don't have an X amount of religious in mind, you know, like once I get to, you know, and then I'll start wearing that super sneeze outfit. Like, you know, I'm just like, no, just this is me. This is, you know, Hashem, and this is my journey, and I'm just going to take it one day at a time. And even though it's crazy to go back to New York, I had been in Chicago at that point for 3 months mm-hmm. when I came to this conclusion that, like, I am a chassid, I'm going back to New York. I thought, well, I'm still not actively religious right now, but I know that's where I'm going. And so I'm going to take little baby steps forward in that direction. And I'm not going to judge myself or tell myself I'm not good enough or I shouldn't go back to Crown Heights until I'm super from again. I'm like, no, I'm just going back to Crown Heights. I'm going to take it one day at a time. And that's what I did. I told my parents, I'm like, thank you for having me. I learned a lot about myself. I grew a lot. I'm ready to go back to New York. And this is going to sound really crazy, but I think I'm going to start an all-women band. And I still remember my mother like sitting me down and being like, Peril, I really think this is not a good idea. Like, you just got here. Like, this sounds really unstable. Like, you just got here. You're not religious. Now you're religious. You're starting a band. Like, what? Like, and who are you going to play for? And like, what? I was like, I know it sounds crazy, and I know it sounds totally erratic, and maybe it is, but like, this is like legitimately what I feel Hashem is telling me to do, and I feel like this is what I'm meant to do. Even the women only thing, playing for women only, which is something I decided before I even went back to New York, that it was going to be a women for women band, you know, all women playing in the band and performing for audiences of all women. I already knew that halachically speaking, Kol Isha, the whole mitzvah of Kol Isha, of a man, a Jewish man not hearing the singing voice of a woman who is not an immediate family member, mm-hmm. it is completely on the man to keep that mitzvah. It is not on us at all. We literally, and I spoke to Rabbanim, like actual big Rabbanim in Crown Heights, who I asked about the halacha. And, you know, someone told me, one of the Rabbanim I spoke to told me, this is how clear it is. Literally, you could like stand on Kingston Avenue, which is like the main street in Crown Heights, and sing your heart out. And if men didn't want to hear it, they'd have to leave. He's like, I'm not advising you to do that. I'm just trying to explain so you understand how the mitzvah works. It's not your issue. It's the man's issue. And I was like, okay, good to know. That said, I thought to myself, okay, so I can perform in front of men. And obviously, as far as, you know, it being a financially viable career path, mm-hmm. performing for mixed audiences would obviously be smarter. But I just had this really strong feeling inside that I need to do something specifically for women. And as a woman growing up in the Hasidic community, and, you know, like I said, I wasn't always religious in high school. I wasn't religious for most of high school. I went to an Orthodox Jewish girls' high school, but I, you know, didn't keep Shabbos or kosher in my own time. I wasn't like doing that at school, but, you know, I did whatever made sense to me, and a lot of it didn't make sense to me at the time. So even within that, I realized as a girl, in high school with all these questions not being answered and with the curiosity about the secular world, I used to go to concerts all the time. And mm-hmm. I thought to myself, I'll bet like most of the girls in my high school or most of the people that I'm friends with who grew up religious have probably never been to a concert before. You know, not a real concert. Maybe they went to an Avram Fried concert where there was a mechitza and there mm-hmm. were men sitting on one side and women sitting on the other side. But a real concert without a mechitza where people are jumping up and down at a mosh pit, like, I bet most of the women in my community have never experienced that before, or women who are Bali Tshuva who became, Orthodox later. Huh?
Who left that world.
Who left that world, yeah. Or you know, people who are Gerim, I have Gerim in my family even, so I'm very familiar with this. And I thought, wow, they probably missed that, but don't think they'll ever be able to experience it again. Because unfortunately, you know, the way it's been, as I'm sure many people can relate to, in the Frum community, when we go to concerts, there's almost always a mechitza, and if anyone's dancing, it's the men. Like, mm-hmm. women are usually, even when there's a mechitza there, even in shul, I feel like most women, yeah, sometimes in shul, if there's, you know, enough people there singing along, some women will start to sing and some women will dance a little. But to really get into it the way the men do, we don't, because we naturally feel, I don't want to say ashamed, but very conscious of the fact that there are men there and that we need to, you know, stay quiet. We don't want to bother anybody. And I feel like that's, you know, while I understand it and I understand that as a community we work together and we don't want to, you know, disturb anybody or make anyone's mitzvah more difficult for them to keep, at the same time, it's always been hard for me to accept that, you know, as a woman who's very musical and who likes to dance and likes to sing, you know, why can't we have our own space too? And I thought, well, if I make a space specifically for women, then all different types of women, Jewish, not Jewish, religious, not religious, they can all come to my concert and they can all dance and mosh pit together. And then it won't be a question of like, well, this woman can come, but that woman can't come. All women are welcome at my concert. And I thought, wow, that'd be so awesome to have like a whole room of women and the concert would be just for them.
It is awesome.
I thought so. And at the same time, I was like, but maybe nobody will buy that. You know, maybe from people, you know, Orthodox Jewish people will think this is way too secular. The idea, the concept, the music, the sound, everything. And maybe secular women will think it's really old fashioned and conservative and patriarchal for me to, you know, it sounds funny to say patriarchal, but I've had that thrown my way because mm-hmm. people assume that the reason that I perform for women only is because men are telling me I must. And I'm like, I always tell people, I'm like, why are we bringing men into this? This isn't about men at all.
This is my choice. Exactly. And it's a good one. Go try it out with me.
Right? I'm like, even bringing them into the equation is giving them too much room here. This is all about women. It's not about anti-man, God forbid. Men are awesome. We love men. Men are great. But let's face it, men have had opportunities and places to express themselves in this way, to sing and dance openly and publicly for forever, you know, and we haven't. And so I just felt like I don't see anyone else doing this. And I really want to do this for women. So that's what I did. I went back to New York and I started looking for musicians to play with me. And thank God, you know, slowly but surely, I found people to play with me and formed a band, which is Bulletproof Stockings, if anyone has heard of it.
Right.
We called ourselves the first all-girl Hasidic rock band. Although I've been sent messages from different women in Israel being like, well, what about this band?
And
what
about seriously, like, that's funny.
Okay, take it back. Maybe we're not the first all-women band. We're just in the United States. Right. Trying to come up with a cute catchphrase. But, you know, maybe we weren't the first all-women Hasidic rock band ever, but I think we were the first all-women Hasidic rock band to get as much press as we did and to make waves the way we did. And thank God, you know, slowly but surely, we were not just producing our own shows for the Orthodox Jewish community, but we actually started making you know, moves out in the secular music world and playing in regular large rock venues that are well known. And we fortunately were able to have a very successful tour the last year that we were a band together, which was 2015 going into the beginning of 2016. We did like a nationwide tour, which was really, really awesome. We got to play in some very big venues and meet all different types of women from all different types of backgrounds who were really excited and inspired about this women-only space. And it's funny, like when people ask me now, you know, even in interviews about this women's-only space and why, you know, I always tell people, like, you should come to a concert and then you'll understand.
Yeah,
you know,
it's you have to experience it. Even when we go to a separate wedding versus a mixed wedding, I don't know about you, but even though I came from that world and I thought it was going to shock me and I thought this is going to be so lame, like so boring, like who dances separately? I could tell you, like, it was the biggest, most fun thing that I experienced. I was like, oh, I get it. I get it. This is fun. Like for real.
Right. Exactly. There's something, and it's not even just about, the tension or about, you know, sexuality or something like that getting in the way. There's something really empowering about women being around other women.
Definitely. And there's a positive energy. There's a beautiful positive energy, right?
Yes, absolutely. And it's like, it's palpable. It really is. Mm-hmm. And you see it on people's faces. I've had so many fans come to shows, plenty of secular women, Jewish or not Jewish, who have told me, you know, I've never been to a women's only space before. I never went to a women's only concert. And I was kind of skeptical coming in because I thought it might be like a little boring or a little frumpy or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, all of them were like, wow, like, that was so inspiring. And I can't even explain why it was so inspiring, but something about being around all these other women was so uplifting for me. And thank you, you know, so it's really, it's so amazing to hear that because, you know, every once in a while, I'll question like, oh, I don't know, is this doing anything for people? Like, right. You know, like, is that really what they want? But, you know, again and again, women are saying, yes, yes, this is what we want. Keep making women's spaces. To kind of go on a tangent, I don't know if you read about this movie, Wonder Woman, that just came out with this lead, Gal Gadot, from Israel. So this theater called Alamo Drafthouse made women's-only screenings of Wonder Woman recently.
Really?
And yeah, just for fun, just because it was Wonder Woman, and they've never done that before. As far as I know, but it made headlines because men were freaking out about it, and saying this is sexist and backwards and
how
dare
funny.
You. And they took what they said and they were like, you know what? Women love it so much. It sold out in like 2 seconds. We're going to make more of them. So they made even more women's only screenings of Wonder Woman recently, and many celebrities. And I think like maybe the mayor of Austin or somebody like wrote some whole thing about how wonderful this is because people were sending them like hate mail. I'm trying to think who it was. I think it was like the mayor of Austin, Texas, like got some angry letter from some guy saying like, we should boycott Austin. Nobody should visit this place. And he was like, wow. I mean, it's just, thank God. It's amazing to see this happening now. And when I read it, I was like, oh, wow, I've been doing this for like 6 years. Now they're getting in on this.
Interesting.
Telling me that, yeah. It's just so funny. Like, but
I think you could say you were the pioneer of the all women's performance trend.
I don't know, but maybe. But definitely a part of it somehow. But it was kind of cute to see that all these guys were freaking out, and I was like, oh yeah, that's so normal. Like, it didn't even like surprise me. I'm like, I'm so used to that. Like, for any press, any positive press that I've gotten, you know, as Bulletproof Stockings or with my solo act now as Peril, definitely there's always men commenting on there, and sometimes even women who get the wrong idea and think that this is sexist or think that it's anti-man or that it's backwards. Or like I said before, like even worse, thinking that the reason I do it is because men are making me do it.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I know, right? It's so offensive. It's like, why can't you just let us be empowered? Like, I'm men in this way.
So,
But it's exciting to see that the world is kind of coming around to it. And I'm hoping, you know, with time, it won't even be that big of a deal. You know, it's a big deal now because maybe people haven't really been doing it. And hopefully with time, you know, the whole women's only thing might not even be, you know, might not even be necessary at some point. But for now, it's very empowering and very exciting for women. And so I'm excited to be a part of it.
Definitely. So you overcame the resistance, you got the acceptance of the world, both the Orthodox world, as well as, you know, you performed in places that weren't necessarily Jewish venues. So you definitely overcame resistance there and gained a lot of press about what you were doing. And now you've gone solo as Pearl. So what has that been like, and where is this going?
So, yeah, I mean, the choice to go solo came a month or two after my last tour with Bulletproof Stockings ended, which was January 2011. So like February, March, I took a little time off to just take a breather because we had been touring for a long time and just kind of reevaluate where things were at. And it seemed like, you know, people in the band were moving in different directions. Mm-hmm. And it was really, I was really afraid. You know, you said that all beginnings are hard, and
This was a new beginning.
It was a new beginning. It was really, really, it was hard because I, you know, had worked very hard on this whole project and, you know, really believed that that would be my thing for a long, long time. And I mean, I've always been somebody who's open to change and accepting of change and accepting that, you know, we change as we grow and things are never going to be linear. But right. Still, it was hard. You know, I thought that it would last longer than it did. And that doesn't take away from it in any way. Thank God it was, you know, very successful. We were able to do a lot as Bulletproof Stockings. But it was a hard and sad decision to make. And I didn't know if I'd continue playing music, which made me even more sad because mm-hmm. I had all these new songs ready to go. And I was just like, what am I going to do? Just stop now? You know, like, if Bulletproof Stockings is over, does that mean I don't have a music career? And if I put myself out there as a solo act, will anyone care? And will it be the same thing? And I realized that, no, it won't be the same thing, but it's part of, you know, my evolution as a person. And it's very, I guess, common in the music industry for bands and band members to change and for, you know, artists to move on to different projects. And so it's been a really eye-opening experience, and it's been really exciting working on new stuff. So I'm working on a new album now, and I haven't started recording yet. I'm just getting all of the last minute details together before I actually get into the studio. So I'm just finishing tweaking these songs, making sure, you know, I like the key that it's in, wow. Figuring the instrumentation of each song. But I've been performing as Pearl for a year now. And you saw me in Houston. And actually that show that I played in Houston, I also played with two people who played with me in Bulletproof Stockings, Donna Pastoon, who plays violin, and Ellie Shevemeister, who plays cello. And another friend, Glory Bell Castro, who plays drums. Mm-hmm. So it's been fun. I've been able to play with other musicians and continue touring and playing shows around the States. And right now I'm like, you know, I'm still planning to tour over the year and play shows in different cities. But mostly right now for the next few months, I'm going to be focusing on the album. Like I said, finishing the writing for it, getting lots of musicians involved. If anyone out there is listening.
Yeah, if anybody's a musician listening, send Pearl an email, please.
Right. I'm looking for, and you don't have to be Jewish, you don't have to be religious. I'm just looking for women, definitely all women. I'm looking for horn players. I'm looking for string players. I'm looking for a bassist. I might be looking for a couple of guitar players, maybe even some woodwinds. a couple of the songs are going to be like very well orchestrated. Like one of the songs, I'm actually thinking of having an entire orchestra of women on. So
So beautiful.
I am excited. So yeah, definitely. If anyone's interested,
all the musicians listening to this podcast, please contact me or Pearl. Let's make this happen.
Yeah, definitely. So, and as far as where I might be recording in Chicago, which is where I am right now. I came here for a few months just to just to see my family and to work on the album. So I haven't decided if I'm going to record in Brooklyn or if I'm going to record in Chicago. Might be a little bit of both, but either way, yeah, definitely. You can email me at pearlwolfmusic@gmail.com if you're interested.
Awesome. We'll make that happen. So Pearl, when I hear your story, you know, it reminded me, I recently read somewhere, I'm trying to remember where, but I really liked it. It said that challenge is a detour in the right direction. And it seems from listening to your story that yes, it in fact it is. You know, we go through these challenges and we're like, why are you throwing this one at me, God? Like, you know, the last one was hard enough, you know, but it ends up always being a detour in the right direction. And God never sends anything that we cannot handle, obviously, right? So you took a huge leap of faith. You obviously were open to seeing the signs that God was sending along the way. And it was a huge leap of faith to take this kind of unusual career path and really seeing that, wow, this is definitely, even though these things often come with a little bit of self-doubt and questioning, like you say, you start saying, well, no, this seems to be where God is leading me and there's something right here. And, you know, you keep seeing the feedback and you keep feeling like you're going in the right way. So on that note, let's talk about inspiration. And I don't necessarily mean music inspiration, but when you're in such a courageous place where you are, I'm sure at times, you know, you need to draw strength. And is there a person or a body of Jewish work perhaps, or that you draw inspiration and strength from? Like, where do you go for that?
It's a good question. It's definitely multifaceted. It's a good question. As far as inspiration, I would say, I mean, first of all, as like on a daily basis, being outside is really important for me. I love the outdoors. And being one with nature is a huge part of where I draw my inspiration from. I love being around water. I love being around trees. I like hiking. And so being outdoors and exploring the outdoors is a huge source of inspiration for me. I just feel very connected to the earth and very connected to godliness and to, you know, my inner voice, I guess, when I'm outside. So I tend to go for really long walks or sit at the beach, like by myself for hours sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's like a really great place for me to draw inspiration. As far as role models or figures, as cliche as it'll sound, being a Chabad woman, but the Lubavitcher Rebbe obviously is a huge, huge inspiration for me. All of the Chabad Rebbeim really were in their writings. I'm particularly a huge fan of the Rebbe Rashab's writings and also the Friedrich Rebbe's writings. But the Rebbe is just such a huge source of inspiration every day for me. And really,
I think in particular for women, right? I mean, he was so ahead of his time when, you know, in the topic of women and femininity and just really.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Rebbe was a huge champion of women. And it's funny, actually, like an article many moons ago quoted me saying that I believe the Rebbe was a feminist. And then the writer comments that I looked a little bit like unsure if I should have said that. And I was like, yeah, it's true. People might think that's a really bold statement, but I absolutely believe it's true. I mean, I feel the Rebbe was a feminist in the truest form. You know, it's not
absolutely
about political leanings. It's about empowering women. The Rebbe from day one was, you know, always behind women. He gave talks to women himself, which is like unheard of for a Chabad Rebbe or for a Rebbe in general, not a Chabad Rebbe, but a Rebbe. You know, and always talking about including women and that women should be at the forefront. And that I just saw a video the other day on, like, I have like this gem WhatsApp,
like, yes.
Videos that I get. It's amazing. And there was a video, I should post it, where the Rebbe is talking to women about how, you know, women maybe back in the day didn't learn as much as men, but in today's day and age, absolutely women are a part of everything and should be learning just as much as men. And he said something interesting that I haven't heard a lot of people say, which is that we evolve and that our customs evolve with time. And I hadn't really heard that before. And I was like, that is so progressive.
That is
and
so
I
progressive.
And I completely agree that that's how things should be. And, you know, sometimes, I don't know, it's there's something so beautiful about how connected we all are as Jews and the way that our communities are. But at the same time, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, things get swept under the rug and there are all sorts of issues and things that people don't like to talk about, including issues that relate specifically to women, you know, like the Aguna crisis and all of that. And without getting into politics specifically, I just think it's amazing. It's amazing to hear those words that women should be at the forefront and that we need to evolve, you know, with time for what works for people as well.
And I think also the Rebbe, you know, he put women at the forefront, but it always went back to going to staying he always brought us back to who we truly are as women, as different, as just uniquely special as being women, not, God forbid, as, you know, having to be like men. So there was something right. so empowering and beautiful of, you know, being able to recognize in Judaism and everything that we do, just to be able to recognize that we have such wonderful intrinsic value just being women, and we have such a special role as women that we don't have anything to look on the other side look for. And definitely. So Pearl, I noticed when I was at your concert, and I just had this experience with my own son 2 days ago. He was performing. He also has been playing the piano since he's six, and he's 11 years old. And he was doing his end of the year piano recital, and he had some classical pieces that he needed to play, as any student of piano, right? And then he had also chosen to play the Nigun, the Alter Rebbe's Nigun, which is, for those who are familiar, is the wedding Nigun in Chabad Lubavitch weddings. And it's a very, very special piece, and it requires a lot of work. And you know, he did fine in the performance, and then when he played the Alter Rebbe's Nigun, it was like everybody was in awe. We were all in awe. It was just beyond. And not to say that all the other pieces were beautiful. And it reminded me that when you played the concert, your music was beautiful, your lyrics were beautiful. But then at some point you played a Nigun, and it like took me flying to the heavens, and I could see your brilliance as an artist. And my husband commented the same thing from a recent album. I think it was Tuvia Bolton also came out, who he has been playing his own music for a while. And then, and I think his last album, he included Nigunim, and it was like, whoa, you could see the artist's brilliance. Do you see this? Do you see the power of the Nigunim? Like, what do you think about Nigunim?
Yeah, absolutely. I love Nigunim, and I've always connected to Nigunim, even as a kid, even as a teenager, even when I was going through my different things, and even when I wasn't religious, I always have had like a very special place for Nigunim. They're absolutely, they're songs of the soul, literally. I feel
literally,
like
right?
they sing directly to your soul, and I've seen it at my concerts. I've seen so many secular women and non-Jewish women who have, you should have seemingly no connection to the song. They don't know the song. They're not familiar with it. They don't know the lyrics. They don't even know what I'm saying. You know, sometimes I'll mention what the lyrics are saying before I start the Nigun, so that, you know, people who are not familiar can feel a little bit more connected. But sometimes I don't even do that because there's no time. And I always have people coming over to me. I even once had a male filmmaker who was there videoing the show for some TV thing, and he came over to me later and he was like, the whole concert was amazing, but I don't know what you sang in the middle with those Hebrew words. Oh my God, you should make a whole album just so that I buy it today.
Wow, there is holiness in it. For those Absolutely. Listeners who are not familiar, I could maybe talk about another segment, but there a Nigun, a Chabad Nigun is how would you describe it, Pearl? It's just like classical music that the different rabbeim have composed, and they have a level of holiness that is just hard to describe. You have to experience it, I guess.
yeah. Nigun is like a Hasidic melody. Sometimes it's wordless. Sometimes it has words. And yeah, I think the tunes themselves are so, so inspiring and so beautiful. And there's something so I don't know, it's something so raw about it that just hits at your core,
your core, you know? Your essence. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I definitely do see the power of the niggin specifically. And it's funny that you're asking me about this, because right now I'm debating whether or not to put one niggin on this new album or not.
Well, this was your sign from Hashem. You're putting it.
I guess so. And I'm also planning eventually on making an actual album of Nugunim as well. So we'll see about that. Hopefully one day soon that'll come out as well.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I love Nugunim, and it's wonderful that you're bringing this up. Yeah, it's really amazing to see what it does to people. Like, it just takes everyone to another place.
Yep. Pearl, do we know when should we be looking out for the album? Do we have like an estimated date, or we don't want to talk about it?
I want to say my goal would be to put it out next spring, which seems like very far away, but it's not.
No, it's not. No, I could understand that. I get it. So Pearl, let's have a little bit of fun here. I always like to end my interviews with what I call JLP fill in the blanks. And this is a part of the show where I give you an open-ended question and you answer it with the first thing that comes to mind. No right or wrong answers. It's just always fun and inspiring from us to learn from everybody. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. I am Pearl Wolf, and I feel most spiritual when?
I am Pearl Wolf, and I feel most spiritual when I'm singing. Probably when I'm singing a niggin, actually.
I could see that. I could have seen that coming.
Yeah.
My favorite mitzvah, or one that I feel most connected to, is?
My favorite mitzvah, or one that I feel most connected to, is Avos Yisrael, which is to love your fellow as yourself, which is kind of a really broad one and one that is incredibly important. So it might seem kind of, I don't know, like typical of me to choose that one, but I think that it's the one that is the most important and the one that is the most difficult. And I feel it more now than I ever have before, how important it is to love your fellow as yourself, which I think means giving people the benefit of the doubt and trying to see things from another perspective, even when it's difficult for you.
Yes.
That, of course, does not mean to negate yourself or to put yourself in an abusive or manipulative situation. God forbid, you know, we need to choose, you know, carefully, and we need to use tact, and we need to trust our gut, you know, when something feels right or wrong. But I think my belief, and maybe I'm just an eternal optimist, but I really believe that most people in the world are good, and that most people want good for other people. And I feel like, especially the state of the world, the way it is right now, with so much chaos and so much distress happening. And I also wonder sometimes, like, is it that things are getting worse, or is it just that we have this crazy microscopic lens on everything with the internet? And I think it's probably a little bit of both.
A little bit of both, right. But yeah. We could definitely use a lot of love.
A lot of love. No, for sure. I just feel like people are so torn up, and people are fighting over so many things right now in politics. And I see people that I even love and care about, who I respect and who I trust, you know, saying things that I would never fathom them saying, or kind of seemingly putting out opinions out there that I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, just a couple months ago, like, I thought we saw more eye to eye. And I've been working hard to not let my ego get in the way, not let my opinions get in the way. And even if I don't discuss this, even if it's only in my own mind and my own spirit that I'm thinking these things, to try and subdue that side and say, like, where is this person coming from? You know, where, like, what's at the heart of what it is that they're trying to say? Because I feel like we so get caught up in what we're actually hearing, and we don't pay attention to what is below that, you know, what's at the soul of things.
Right.
And it's hard. It's really hard to do, but I feel like it's all we have, you know? So Avos Yisrael, for sure. Loving your fellow as yourself.
It's a good one. And you said it like a true chassid. It's about putting our ego aside and really giving the benefit of the doubt. That's where the love is. All right. My fondest, sweetest Jewish memory is?
My fondest, sweetest Jewish memory is, I would say, probably Pesach or Sukkot. I don't have like one specific year that stands out to me. I think every time those holidays come around, it's really an amazing time to get together with family and, you know, I, first of all, like I said, I love nature. So Sukkot is awesome for me because it's a beautiful time of year. Right. It's around the time that I was born. It's fall. We get to sit outside. And the lulav and esrog and all of the smells, like everything is just amazing. And then Pesach is amazing because, again, we get together with family. But also, I really do feel like I get to connect to that emancipation, you know, that leaving slavery, that letting go of physicality, letting go of what we believe, what we know, what our ego tells us about the way the world really is. Right, and right. Again, like letting our guards down and saying like, no, we're, you know, we're really souls and we're all really one underneath. And, you know, we went through something miraculous and something amazing together, and it can and will happen again.
Right. And we can still live a life without those limitations, those things that are holding us back, right? And you certainly are an example of somebody who definitely works on that, so an inspiration. When I give tzedakah, I like to give to?
When I give tzedakah, I like to give to organizations that I feel stand for important causes. One that I'm interested in right now is an organization that helps women who are in domestic abuse situations. Mm-hmm. And domestic abuse obviously is not only physical abuse, although that is obviously a huge part of it. It's also verbal, mental, emotional abuse. These are things that so many men and women go through. This organization specifically helps women. But I think it's an amazing organization. They have services for women for free and they do so much good. So that is an organization that is on my mind right now. Their name is Shalva. I figure I'll just mention that since I asked. And you know, if anyone lives, I don't know if they have branches in other cities, but I definitely know in Chicago, you know, Shalva exists and they offer a huge amount of services. So if anyone is in Chicago or the Chicagoland area, or anyone in general who's listening to this, you know, is going through something like that, I really encourage you to reach out to get some help. And there are so many resources out there, and you're definitely not alone. And it's really,
so,
really
so important. So important. I'm so glad you brought that up. It's the first time a guest brought it up, and it is so, so important. All right. I am Pearl Wolf, and today I'm most grateful for.
I am Pearl Wolf, and today I am most grateful for my faith, which what I mean by that is like literally emuna, you know, like actually having belief, actually having faith in something greater than myself, because it's so important. And I see so many people that I love and care about who don't feel that they have a strong faith in things. And so they're feeling very discouraged about the state of the world. And I see so many people getting depressed and upset about it. And of course the climate is terrible, and it is something to get upset about. But I think when you don't have faith that it's going to get better, and you don't have faith that you're not alone and that there's something bigger and greater than you, it becomes unmanageable. It feels, you feel completely helpless. You feel completely alone in the world. And that's the worst feeling you can have. And that's when we start to give up on ourselves and give up on life. And I think that having that faith is, it's not easy. You know, for some people it comes more naturally than others. And for others, you have to work really hard.
It is work. It's a muscle. It's a muscle that we have to work at to strengthen constantly, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And even for people who are naturally more spiritual or naturally more trusting, it's like you said, it's still work. You still have to work on it every day, you know, just to foster and nurture that faith that things can and will get better, that someone cares about you, that you are worth it. And so I'm just very grateful for that, because I recognize, again, going back to that obvious role thing, when I see people getting, you know, losing friendships, losing relationships over politics or things like that, I realize that most people who are completely at their wit's end, they feel a loss of faith. They don't have a belief that things will get better. And so it's really hard to not get angry and to get blinded by your anger and by your fear. And when you feel safe, when you feel secure, when you feel like, okay, things are hard, that's life, but things will get better and that I'm worth it and someone cares about me, you don't feel as hopeless and as lost. And so I feel very grateful to have that faith, and I hope that other people will feel the same way and feel inspired to connect and to reach out and, you know, yeah, things are going to get better for sure.
Things are good. Things are good. They're always good. It's just a matter how we look at them. And we're so lucky to have somebody like you, and you're definitely, your level of Emunah comes through in your beautiful work. Tell us, where can we keep updated on what's going on with Pearl?
You're so sweet. So you can follow me on Facebook. On Facebook, Pearl is spelled P-E-R-L, just four letters. Mm-hmm. So on Facebook, it's under Pearl Music. So if you just facebook.com/P-E-R-L Music, you'll find me there. On Instagram, I am at Pearl Music, same thing. And Twitter, I'm at Pearl _music. So
fabulous.
Yeah.
And if we have any musicians, you know where to find Pearl.
Yes.
You want to be part of that next album, and we're looking forward to that. We really can't wait. Much success and mm-hmm. in the new production, and we look forward to catching up with you later and talking about everything new that's going on in your life after this album comes out.
Thank you so much, Ella. It was really lovely meeting you in person at the concert and also talking today. And you are awesome. And I really am inspired by what you're doing, too. I think just the fact that you're putting yourself out there and sharing stories of other women and, you know, opening yourself up to that is really awesome. So I encourage all other women listening to do the same. And thank you, Yael.
Thank you so, so much.
Thanks for listening to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes, leave a rating, and share the podcast with the Jewish women you love. To access today's show notes, ask Yael a question, or suggest a uniquely talented Jewish woman to be featured on the show, visit JewishLatinPrincess.com.